and come up to my shoulder, and slender, and darker.
The color hair.
Oh, yeah.
Mean eye.
Cold. Looks like a dentist's office.
And what makes it look like a dentist's office?
Everything comes out of a vase and roses. I don't like it here.
There were beings around me. They were little short beings, but fairly chubby and heavy on the beings. And there was about four or five of them. And they were busy doing different things as I was laying on the table. And then I got to here, and there was this little man standing right there. Right there by where you are, pretty much right there. But he was really short, and he had on like a silver suit. I think it was like a dark silver suit, maybe grayish suit. And he had a really large head. He was only like to here.
It just gradually settled down in the field. And at that point, I panicked. And I shut off all the lights. And I went upstairs and I hid in the corner of the bedroom. And as I told you, I sat there for what seemed to be no more than a minute or two. And then I woke up in the morning. I obviously lost the time because I don't know how I got in bed anymore. And I lost the whole night.
And now, the Inception Radio Network presents a special feature presentation, Alien Abduction Roundtable Confessions, with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Extraterrestrial abductions. Just the name of it makes people think and wonder what's going on. We wanted to do a show like this for a long time. Hi, I'm Jerry Pippin, and let me run down what we're going to do tonight. We have a moderator, and that's me, and we have a panelist, and that's Elaine Douglas. And Elaine Douglas is well-known in the business of UFOs. She's the board editor of JAR, J-A-R, and that's a magazine about abductions. She's been a UFO researcher since 1985. She was the MUFON state director for Utah. And she's no stranger to any of our listeners on a regular basis. She also was in Washington, D.C. for many years and was involved in the government in the military affairs. I believe she went to MIT. And we'll talk maybe about that a little bit as well with her. In the 1990s, she was organizer for the Operation Right to Know, which is known as ORTK, an organization which it really, I guess the best way to phrase it, is protesting with the public against UFO secrecy. She holds a master's degree from MIT, as I alluded earlier, and it's in military policy. And let's welcome her to the show. Elaine, good to have you on the line from Utah.
Jerry, good afternoon. How are you?
Okay. Now, I've wanted to do a show with you for a long time about abductions, and you've been interested in it forever, almost, as I heard the resume,
that's right,
bio, as I talked about it. How did you get interested in that?
Well, Jerry, right from the beginning, I mean, it's important to study sightings, and I've studied lots of sightings, and looked into the question of the technologies that the UFOs are using. But what's really important to me is the question, who's in these craft? You know, who's inside these craft, and what are they doing, and what do they want? That's what's important as far as I saw that at a very early point in UFO research for myself.
Now, and so have you had an abduction experience yourself?
No.
Reason I ask is, usually somebody, it's a defining a moment. Don't you agree when people suddenly realize that perhaps something like this has been happening?
Well, I've said, Some people have said to me, well, you must, Elaine, have had abduction experience and you're so interested in abductions. I say to them, look, you've got to be brain dead. If you have the slightest inkling that extraterrestrials are operating on this planet, abducting people, taking them out of their homes, and dealing with them in very intrusive ways, and you're not absolutely riveted to that subject, you know, you must be brain dead. So I don't think you have to have had the experience. You remember that old saying from Ernest Hemingway, "For whom the bell tolls."
When we talk about some of these things, I think probably the best thing we need to do, first of all, if it's okay, if you're laying, is talk about that magazine, JAR. What's that stand for?
Well, JAR is the Journal of Abduction and Counter Research. We're at jarmag.com, and we've been publishing. It's an online magazine. It's only $20 a year, and it has good, high-quality articles about the abduction phenomenon. We sent it to you in a PDF format to subscribers, and the current issue is JAR 9. That's our ninth issue. It's free. And if they go to jarmag.com, we'll send you a free issue with some very dynamite articles in it.
How often does that come out?
Well, irregularly, unfortunately. That's one of my falling down places, is that I have trouble being regular about anything. And as you know, I've been researching MUFON for the past several months, and I'm afraid I've let JAR lapse, but I have no intention, you know, none of us do who's on JAR has any intention of dropping the publication. We're definitely going back to it.
Now you mentioned MUFON, and that was one of your concerns about MUFON. You and I have talked about it on the air and off the air, is that you feel that somebody is leaking information to either the government itself or some company working under contract with the government to show up and find out about these abductions before anybody else does. And you were very alarmed about that. Did I phrase that basically one of your concerns?
I mean, if MUFON were sending the names and addresses of abductees to the U.S. government, that would be dreadful, and it would expose abductees who are already innocent victims of a profound kind of harassment to further harassment from the U.S. government. Because you see, what we've come to understand, Jerry, is there's a thing called MILABS, military abductions. We've come to understand that the cover up, the U.S. intelligence community is very, very interested in the abductions for the very reasons that, of course, I suppose I'm interested in them. I'm not surprised the U.S. government's interested in them, but what we have to understand is that there's a big struggle going on here between the aliens and the government, I think, and people are just expendable in this context. If the government is interested in you as an abductee, they're not interested in your welfare. They're interested in finding out what the aliens are doing with you and what's happening with you between you and the aliens. They're not interested in making you comfortable or safe necessarily. It's just a very disturbing situation.
Well, now, you've talked to many, many abductees, and I've done many shows on it, and it appears to me, and maybe you've been getting the same information or maybe not, I'd like to have you comment on it, but it appears to me that the federal government is coming right along after these abductions and doing the same thing.
Yes, that's what I was talking about, military abductions, my so-called MILABS, military abductions. And all that refers to the extent to which the U.S. government is studying the abductees and trying to duplicate with their own experimental subjects the techniques that the aliens are applying to the abductees. The U.S. government is trying to duplicate it and implement their own efforts in the same directions. And that doesn't surprise me. You were kind enough to mention that I went to MIT and studied military policy. Well, one of the things you understand we need to understand about the military or the government as a whole, is if they think they're facing an adversary, then they study the adversary's weapons and try to duplicate them and find out how to counter those weapons. And if you think that the abductions are a weapon, I'm using the term loosely here, if you're the U.S. government, you see what's going on, then you say to yourself, we have to understand these techniques that are being used on our people, and we have to have them too, and know how to implement and manipulate and use these same techniques. That is what they would think, and that is what I think I see them doing, and that is what I think my labs represent. So in the meantime, probably we need to ask ourselves what the abductions represent. And David Jacobs, a renowned abduction researcher from Pennsylvania, observed early on that the abductions are not an experimental program that the aliens are doing, much less an observational program. It's not a program in which they're just kind of dickering around and seeing what makes humans tick. The abductions are, from what we can observe, they're a developed operational program that the aliens are implementing. They've already done all their experiments, and they've now got this program in full swing. And it's a program, when you study it, it's got momentum, intensity, and the whole abduction scenario that the aliens are implementing, it just cries out purpose, goal, direction. You know, it's not, it's something that they're doing with great intensity and seriousness. The abductions of human beings in the millions all over the planet.
Yeah, we had at one time one of our produced intros on our show that is a percentage of people who think they've been abducted, and it turns out to be about 7 million or maybe more.
Well,
how many do you think we're talking
about?
The only figure
that I have that I know of that is reliable, I suppose it's reliable, I think it is, it's the most reliable, would be the Roper poll of 1992, which found, at that time, 3.7 million abductees. That's what the estimate was from the sampling they did. And it's really, if you're an abduction researcher, the only thing you can say about how many abductions there are is a lot. Okay, there's a lot. If you wanted to be an abduction researcher, you would have no trouble locating people who've had these experiences to study them, if that's what you wanted to do. There's a bunch, a whole bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry, you might say, what does this consist of? So, okay, it's a program with momentum and intensity and purpose and goal. So what are they doing? I've tried to sum this up so many times. The way I describe it today is the abductions are a set of techniques for obtaining complete control over a human being. The foundation of it is technological implants, tiny little devices that we find abductees have inserted all over their bodies, including in their brains and every other part of their body you want to name. We can give you an example of an individual who appears to have, or even an object has been recovered from their limbs, their feet, you know, their groin, their mouth, their nose, their eyes, their brain, their ears. This is technology, which I believe, without this technology, these implants, I call it wiring, I say the abductees are wired. Without that, I don't believe that the aliens could control people. I think that's a requirement for their control. And then layered on top of that, Jerry, is behavior modification. And it starts in infancy. It starts in certainly early childhood. And there's a lot of different protocols that are employed. And we don't understand what the difference is between some of these protocols. For example, just a gross example would be, some people are abducted like every 6 years. Some people are abducted 3-4 times a week. And what's the difference between one of those people and the other people? the ones that are abducted six times every 6 years, we don't know. But there's a big variation. Yet, all are implanted, all have this behavior modification. And what's the behavior modification about? Well, okay, I'll wait for you to ask me that question.
Now, when we talk about abductions and these, wide swing of experiences, some are abducted fairly often, as you alluded to, and others not so often.
Right.
It almost sounds like it's a scientific experiment, like we do on the animals, but at the same time, I believe many of the abduction researchers I've talked to think it's a little more nefarious than that. It's a little more sinister. What do you think?
Well, that's what I was alluding to, that it's, I don't call it experimental or observational. It's, they know what they're doing. They're not experimenting with what they're doing. They know what they're doing, and they've got a goal and a purpose, and they're pursuing it with great intensity. And so then the question comes up, you know, what's the goal? What's the behavior modification? What's that all about?
We're gonna talk about some specific cases here as we go along tonight, Elaine. I'd like to get you to have your comments about them as well. Peter Davenport's on the highway up in Washington State, but I think we're going to make a contact to him fairly shortly, another 5 minutes or so. And we always think of Peter Davenport, Elaine, as, reporting UFO sightings. But he's interested in abductions too, right?
Well, he has a tremendously important case that he's going to talk about, I hope. It's this case of Pennsylvania, 2002. Mr. Todd Sees, who...
Yeah, we visited with him briefly last night, and he's going to bring that up, and that's a case that's very interesting. When we talk about abductions, I guess it all goes all the way back to Betty and Barney Hill, and basically they take you on aboard a ship, and they examine you. To all other sorts of things. What are some of the most unusual abduction stories you've heard? I mean,
the question of when these abductions began is very important. And Dave Jacobs, to mention him again, he seems to feel that they began in the very late 19th century. And what we see is that, of course, it's well known about the multi-generational abductee families where an abductee can tell you that their grandmother had these stories, and their parents had these stories, and they have stories, and their children have stories, and maybe their grandchildren have stories. One of the differences between those generations is that those earlier generations never were brought into conscious awareness by the aliens of what was going on. But today we see a different protocol. In other words, let's say your grandmother, Jerry, if she was an abductee, she never would have really become aware of it. She might have had strange stories that she could tell of unusual things that happened, but she never would have really understood it. And nor would your mother, in all likelihood, if she had been an abductee. But if you were, then something else would be going on, which is going on today. And that is, the aliens are awakening the abductees, and forcing them to become consciously aware of the presence of the ET in their lives. And people are being woken up on purpose by the aliens. And that seems to be part of the unfolding purpose.
So you're saying that they're actually behind this movement where we're finding out about abductions? In other words, they're giving more or less a silent consent, or maybe a little more active than that, and actually...
Yes, you're right. You're right on target. You're suggesting that we found out about the abductions because the aliens wanted us to find out about them. That's what I think you're saying, and that's what I believe it to be the case. They want us to know about it. And as we learn about it, we learn that for the most part, there is nothing we can do about it. See, in other words, when they want you to find out something about them, they also want you to find that out. They want you to find out that they're doing any doggone thing they want to do, and there won't be anything that you can do about it. See, that's the corollary that you're supposed to learn.
Okay, we are going to go ahead and take some phone calls here and get to Peter Davenport in a minute as well. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Jerry. It's Janet Saylor.
Hey, Janet. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
I hear your conference is beginning to get a little action up here in Taos. When is that?
Yeah, it sure is. Been on the phone all day.
Good. That's actually, I guess, the 25th of October through the 30th.
Yep,
and,
you
have some abductees. I think you have some subjects this year about that, don't you?
Stephen Jones.
When we call him an abductee.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about. I think there's maybe more than one kind of abduction, and I don't know that Elaine and I have really discussed this, but I'm learning from people who, especially some who are going to be speakers at this year's event, that there are apparently some benevolent abductions as well as some nasty ones. And I know the nasty ones are really awful. We've had some of those people at previous symposiums, like Niara Heisley, for instance. Stephen Jones has been abducted, and he's contacted all the time, and he doesn't feel threatened by his experiences. On the other hand, Travis Walton, who was at our symposium last year and is going to be back again this year in kind of a different context, he was very threatened. I'm kind of hoping some of these guys will call in a little while so we can have a discussion about it.
They probably will. Elaine, what do you think about that? Do you agree with Janet or not?
Oh, absolutely. She's quite right. And for many people, the abductions are a source of wonder and curiosity. And I would ask Janet this. Janet, suppose some unknown people came to your house and kidnapped you and took you out for a steak dinner and showed you a great movie and then delivered you back to your house. Would you be concerned? In other words, first of all, the underlying issue is not whether you have a good time or you don't have a good time. The aliens are perfectly capable of showing you a good time. The underlying issue is this. You're being taken against your will by an unknown force for purposes that you do not understand. And there's, in my book, there's no way to get comfortable with something like that.
Well, I agree. The word that you use is, they kidnapped me, and anybody who kidnaps me is not okay with me, regardless of whether or not they give me a steak dinner, which I should be so lucky. But I think sometimes, at least from some of the people I'm speaking with and working with, is that they come to believe or they come to feel differently about their abductors, and there's really no other word for them. You're right about that. They come to feel differently about them once they are assured of, for lack of a better term, a benevolent agenda. I agree. I don't think anybody should be kidnapping anybody. On the other hand, is it always kidnapping? I mean, some of the people I've been talking to tell me they've been contacted first, and I think there's a distinction between contact and abduction.
Sometimes
they overlap, but sometimes they don't.
If you want to look at just the technical aspects of it, the abductions are a set of things by which the aliens communicate with you and do what they want with you. It is not always limited to they come and take your physical body. Sometimes they come and take your non-physical body. Sometimes they don't take your body at all, or physical or non-physical. Sometimes they just hang around in your house. Sometimes they just invade your dreams. Sometimes they provide you with visions. You name it. Sometimes they send strange creatures.
You know, Elaine and Janet, it seems to me that There's a lot of screen memories or something going on here that people don't really remember whether or not they had a good time or not. I mean, that seems like it's they have the ability to implant those things. It's hard to tell reality.
There is a thing called screen memories, and but I would not be one who would try to say that any abductor who said they had a good time on an abduction was laboring under a screen memory. No, having a good time is part of the whole picture. In other words, I mentioned behavior modification, and I've talked about goals. The goal is the capitulation of the abductee. The goal is the surrender. The abductee reaches a point when he is bonded, he ceases to resist, he embraces the alien purpose, and things go well from the alien's point of view, he begins to propagate it publicly. And one of the techniques they use is to alternate pleasant and unpleasant. That's just one of their disorienting techniques. They'll pick you up on Monday, and you'll be scared out of your mind and subject you to great pain. They'll pick you up on Friday, and you'll have a lovely time. And pretty soon your head is spinning back and forth. You don't know what the heck is going on with you. And you start to come up with ideas like, well, the good aliens picked me up on Friday because I had a good time. And the bad aliens picked me up on Monday because I had a rotten time.
But it could be the same ones.
And things like that. Or you'll come up with the idea, well, the government picked me up on Friday when I had a bad time. And it was the good aliens that picked me up on Monday when the government picked me up when I had a bad time. In other words, you'll start to make these what I think are non-valid distinctions between having a good time and good people and bad people. It's all the same people. And oh, yes, I'm quite aware that they look different. You know, I'm quite aware that some of them are tall and some of them are short. Some of them have scales and some of them have smooth skin. Some of them have big eyes, some of them don't. Some of them have noses, etc. I'm well aware of all that. For example, if there were good aliens, why don't they stop the bad aliens? You know, because they don't. So what good are the good aliens if they can't stop the bad aliens?